Thank you for joining us on Feed the Crew. If you haven't already, please subscribe and follow us on Facebook or Instagram. If you have any feedback, if you'd like to be a guest or suggest a topic, go to our website, feedthecrewpodcast.com. If you love the show and want to support us, you can do that at buymeacoffee.com/feedthecrew. Today, we have Roger Bull from Minneapolis, Minnesota. Roger is an executive producer, a production stage manager, and a show director. He's also one of my favorite people to work with. Welcome to the show, Roger. I'm so glad you could be here with us.
Thank you, Ray. It's a pleasure to be here, and you're one of my favorite people, too.
Oh, that's so sweet. I want to have you introduce yourself to our audience. Just tell us a little bit more about yourself.
Sure. I am Roger Bull, and I have been working in this industry since 1986. So that was back in the slide days, before we even put video up on the scaffolding. So I've just been through all of the bells and whistles through the years and been kind of keeping up with technology as it's changed. And boy, over the last year, a year ago, I had no idea what Zoom was. And here we are on Zoom.
Right. Well, I did know what Zoom was. I actually did some virtual stuff before all this hit. There was a company I worked with that did a lot of virtual stuff, but I didn't expect it to become the thing.
Right? Oh yeah, no kidding. Mm.
All right, so I know that you went to school for broadcasting and you spent 6 years on the radio, right?
Well, you did your homework, or you remembered one of our conversations.
I remember the story about it, obviously. I didn't know how long, and I did go look it up to see if you had put it out there somewhere, and you did. So what I want to know is how you got involved in radio.
Oh, that's an interesting, that's a great story. Mm-hmm. When I first moved to Minneapolis in 1975, I spent all my money and all my savings and realized I had to go to work. And a block away from the house that I think there were five guys that were sharing this house was a Super America station. And I don't know if you know what SA is. It's a great gas and good goods. So it was a convenience store that pumped gas. And in those days, we had full service gas pumpers. Mm. And there was a "we're hiring" sign out in front. And so I went into the Super America and they hired me right away. And I started pumping gas and cleaning windshields and checking oil and doing all that. But quickly, I became a crew chief. And then I moved inside and I was running the cash register. And then I became an assistant manager. And eventually managed my own store. But one day as I was working the cash register and I would say, $5 is clear in area 6 in the Blue Chev, person that I'm helping says, "Wow, you should be on the radio." And the next person I go, "Yeah, that Pepsi in that pack of Salems, that'll be X amount of dollars. Have a nice day." "Oh, you should be on the radio." And so I went into Brown Institute that afternoon and said, "You know, everybody's saying that I should be on the radio." And Brown Institute guy said, "You should be on the radio." And so I went back to SA and said, I think I'm going to go to school. And the district manager says, "Well, I don't know if you're making enough money as an assistant manager. How would you like to have your own store?" And so I ended up managing my own store on Hennepin Avenue in Minneapolis, and we did a great job. And I had that a little over a year, and saved up all my money, went to school, and then before the first term was over, I was working on the radio in Stillwater, Minnesota, and that's a little 5,000 watt station. And I don't know if you know anything about radio, but it's a daytimer. So when the sun comes up, yep, they go on the air. When the sun goes down, they go off the air. Well, it was summer. So now all of a sudden the sun is coming up at 6 o'clock in the morning and going down at 9:30 at night.
Right.
So the afternoon guy said, "I am done at 4:30. And so they heard about me from, I guess, the radio guy instructor. And he said, well, I got a guy. And so I went to work and I was doing the evening shift at Stillwater, WAVN. We're always waving at you.
That's awesome.
And so then I started there, and then I got promoted into full-time doing the afternoons. And then somebody up in Duluth heard me. And so I put together a tape and ended up going up to Duluth and working there for almost a year, afternoon drive at a country radio station. And I had no idea at that point what country radio was. So I ended up afternoon drive having the highest ratings in the upper Midwest. And it was the bull session, of course.
Yeah. Of course. That's awesome.
Music for pickup bars and pickup trucks. And so I got word down to the Twin Cities. Somebody was up in Duluth and they heard me. And then they were a DJ down here in the Twin Cities. And he said, we want your demo. And I came back to the Twin Cities and worked on a 50s and 60s rock and roll radio station for the next 6 years. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. So that, and then how I got into this business was getting fired from radio, because everybody in radio gets fired.
Eventually.
Eventually. Yeah.
Eventually. It is
not a career. The radio station I was on brought in the consultants, and the consultants said, you cannot have a personality and be on the radio. You just read this card that says, you are listening to the golden rock hits of the 50s and 60s. And because it was a personality radio station. Mm-hmm. And then, so I left that one, went to another one that was doing 20 years of rock and roll on FM. And the program director was part of the station I was at, and we both moved over there, and then we ended up doing morning drive. Well, he said, laugh at my jokes. And I said, your jokes are not funny. You pay for your jokes. You get them mailed to you every day. And he said, you will laugh at my jokes. And I said, well, we'll see. I ended up not laughing at his jokes, and he fired me. So, someone else that I knew who was in the business, I was going to get a job at his radio station. And he said, you know, there's a production company that's just lost their audio guy today, and they need somebody to fill in. And so I went over and met I don't remember what his title was, at Martin Bastion Productions. And he said, you know what, we're moving. We are moving from our location into a brand new spot. I need help. I said, you know, I can do all of that stuff, kind of handy guy. So I put together, I started working for him and put together the forced air system for cleaning slides. I ran the wires into the theater. I soldered the entire patch bay for the audio studio. And then finally they said, can you put together a demo of what you would do while you're here with us? And I said, yeah. So I put together a demo, and then they said, you're our audio engineer. And I ended up working at Martin Bastion for 22 years. And I was their audio guy and grew up in that seat, and started staging, taking stuff out on the road. And Tim and I were the two-person staging crew, putting up the 8x24 screen with the center overlap slides and doing all that stuff. And we ran everything from backstage, the lighting, the sound, the slides, everything was all backstage. And, you know, you knew that you would turn up the podium light when you saw the silhouette of the presenter going across the stage. And one day we bought a telex comm system.
Ooh.
And it changed our lives. Mm-hmm. I ended up doing play-by-play out in front, running audio and lights and doing all that stuff, but being able to see everything from the front and not having to read everything backwards on the slides.
Right.
So, and then I've sat in everybody's chair. I've done cameras, I've done shading, I've done directing, I've done graphics, I've done teleprompter. I mean, the first time I did teleprompter was an overhead projector that was in an airwall pocket because it was so bright. And we just did the paper underneath the overhead projector and put it to a downstage monitor.
That's awesome.
So, you know, it's all the things you do. And then we had our own scene shop. So I was building sets and taking them out on the road. And so that's kind of how I've been in the business and gotten to where I am today.
That's so awesome. You actually told me a whole lot more than I knew about you.
Well, yeah, I know. Well, you asked.
Hey, no, I think it's awesome. And that's
how much time do you have to fill?
Oh, no, we have plenty of time. We're good. Okay. That's kind of how I got started show calling as well, was being an A1, being, you know, sometimes you're the only person out there, or sometimes anyway, that's about me. That's not about you. So, in that journey, did you have any mentors that you looked up to? Anybody help you out along the way?
Yes, there were a couple producers that ended up taking me aside and saying, you know, if you want to do this, you know, you should probably work a little harder on this, and you need to sit in that seat over there, learn what they are doing. Like when you're doing these days and doing the screen shifting and, mm-hmm. and doing all of that, you got to know how many buttons these guys are pushing, because you can't just give a laundry list and say all of this all on my big geo. Because you know, when you're coming out of a video, the lights have to be up before you go to IMAG. So that's two different calls. And then sometimes you're advancing graphics underneath. And so there's all kinds of different things that you're doing to call a show. Mm-hmm. And I had one guy in particular that said, if you give a standby, you have to give a go. And don't say any other word beside go. And you can give all of the standbys that you want, and make sure that the go is the last thing that you say, was another one. So, cause I was listening, I was a production assistant backstage listening to someone else call a show, and, they're going standby. I don't remember what it was, but standby for graphics to screen. And standby for this lighting, and standby for this video, and go lighting. And you're like, well, what about the other guys?
Right.
Yeah. And so I learned a lot from listening as a PA. Mm-hmm. And that helped a lot in the early days, because I didn't know that I was going to end up being a stage manager. But I was backstage and a producer, so I was getting all of the graphics together and getting the teleprompter and working with everybody backstage. Mm-hmm. So I was more of a producer and PA on the jobs and hiring a stage manager. And then finally, I was doing a lot of the calling of my own shows for many, many years. And we had very large clients. And so we were doing the major events over in Hawaii with, you know, two different stages, one in a ballroom and one out on the beach. And so I was calling all of the shows and going from one venue to the other venue. And my technical director one day just crossed his arms and he says, you're never doing this again. You are a producer or you are a show caller. One or the other. And he said, and if you don't, I will not be your technical director. And I went, you know what? That makes total sense. You know, I'd rather, you know, produce and give it off to other people, or I would rather just call the shows. So we had five producers on staff, I think, at one point, and I would call their shows. And it was a lot of fun for me to do that. And I went freelance in the mid 90s as a stage manager, as a show caller. And within a year, Al called me back to Martin Bastion, and he said, "You need to be a producer on staff, and you need, and we will give you this much money." And I went, "Money? Wow, in this business?" and so that I went back on staff, and so I was there until the 2007, 2008, 2009 time frame. That I think it was 2009 that
first recession.
Yeah, whatever that was.
World,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, because I had all of the largest companies and the largest work in the company. Mm-hmm. And Al just brought us all into his office, and he said, "You know, if you have anything on the work in progress list, you have a job. If you don't, I have to let you go." And of course, mm-hmm. all of my clients had left within the 2 weeks prior. And so I'm like, I don't have any work in progress. Mm-hmm. So I went and I got into freelance and never looked back. It was the best thing that ever happened to me.
Right. I can imagine that for sure.
So I have the voice that goes along with the tool belt. So I tell people on site to sit down and shut up. Start in 2 seconds.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. And you actually do voiceover work still. Yes,
I do. I do. Yeah. I have a lot of clients that still ping me. Even in the virtual world, doing video narrations. I have an agent. I'm on voices.com.
Okay.
And so there's all of that. Whatever I need to do to bring in a little cash, that's what happens.
But you're really good at it. So, you know, there's no...
Yeah, I have a lot of fun with it too. I've got my own studio downstairs. So mm-hmm. I remodeled the entire lower level so that I could have my studio. And
that's so awesome.
Rewired the entire house, new electric everywhere. And made sure that up here in the office, we have separate circuits on every wall and data ports everywhere. So that was all before the virtual world. So that has really helped a lot.
That's what I miss about my house in Maryland, is that we had the 650 square feet downstairs that was my office that could have been anything. And now here in Houston, I'm upstairs in the former guest room kind of.
Right, exactly.
So we've removed the spare bedroom. We don't have one anymore.
Well,
nobody was coming to visit, so it really didn't matter.
Yeah, we remodeled the entire house. We've lived here 30 years, and we've done everything. I finally have my kitchen. I moved a stairway so that I could expand the kitchen. We knocked down like four walls so we could have the nice open, open, what everybody in Edina wants is the open floor plan.
Right.
So we have the ranch that everybody wants. We remodeled this office made sure, because we've both been working from home for a long time. So,
right.
Yeah, it's just, it's a lot of fun.
Well, and speaking of working from home for a long time, how were you affected by the pandemic? How are you doing? What's going on in your world from that perspective?
Initially, it mm-hmm. was very strange. And I know that that's a fact for everybody I talk to. Because mm-hmm. your phone, 2019, looking at the calendar going into 2020, I said, this is going to be my best year ever. Mm-hmm. What could possibly go wrong?
Mm-hmm.
And then,
so it's all your fault. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So in January, I was doing a lot of traveling. I think I had like four or five shows in January, a couple in February. And of course, everything was packed for the entire year. Mm-hmm. And I think I've had the COVID, because of all of that traveling, I was kind of sick the end of January and the first week of February.
Oh, wow.
But it was like a bad cold and a little bit of, you know, it was fatigue and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I don't get sick. So it was just like, this is just strange. But, you know, looking back, maybe, I have no idea. But then all of a sudden, the phone starts pinging and, okay, this is canceled. This is canceled. Mm-hmm. And it was one after another, after another, after another. And so my entire year, up until I think it was July, all of them were canceled. And then, of course, everybody had the, oh, you know, we'll be back meeting in June. We'll be back meeting in July. So those didn't cancel until later.
Right.
But that first wave was very intense. And so I just started doing projects around the house, doing things like that. And I said, maybe this is what it's like to be retired. and actually, we had a real nice couple of months, but, you know, there was nothing. Mm-hmm. There's a couple other stories that go along with all that stuff, but work-wise, no work. And then all of a sudden, the virtual stuff started to pop up. I had a couple of studio gigs that I would go to the headquarters where, you know, the executives were coming into the headquarters. So we would set up studio locations there, and then they would stream it out to their people because they still had to talk to their people. And so that kind of started the end of the mid-March, mid to late March, something like that. So I was in it right away.
That's great.
And there was a couple of studios here in town that immediately went into the virtual stuff. They just said, oh, we know this is going to happen, so we've got to be ready for it. So they got into the vMix and all of the stuff that we're working with these days, the high-def streaming systems.
Right.
So, and I have such a wonderful network of people from, my goodness, Orlando is keeping me busy, Kansas City. I just had New York last week call and say, how's your entire month of April?
Awesome.
So it and Houston they're from all over.
Right.
So
that's awesome.
It was more going out to studios at the beginning and going into headquarters and still doing that a little bit. But most of the stuff that I'm doing now is all here from home because I've got one monitor that's on the show flow, one monitor that's on the vMix, one monitor that's on the return, one on the script, one on the prompter, one with graphics going. So it's all right here, all around me.
Mm-hmm.
So I can do almost everything from here in my home office. I miss traveling. I like the travel, but I guess maybe I don't miss it. The crew catering, feeding the crew catering's pretty darn good here.
I bet you it is. I was thinking the same thing. I was going to say, I bet the food's awesome.
Oh, yeah. No kidding. We feed the crew really well. And the commute is, you know, super short.
Exactly. Yep. We have the same thing here.
Yeah.
So how do you see things in 2021? Do you see things changing back? Do you see them staying the same? Do you see them a
well,
mix?
I think one of the things is I don't like the term the new normal.
Right.
What is that? I think it's the next normal because there's going to be one following the next and there's going to be another one following that. I think that... we're going, you know, who knows what our industry is going to look like. It's going to be a long time before we go into the Sands Hotel in the Sands Convention Center in Vegas and fill up Hall B with 6,000 people. You know,
right.
When is that going to happen?
Right.
I think the next normal is going to be a hybrid of what we're doing now. I think we're going to go into the live events that are streaming. that, you know, we have our CEOs over in the UK and he doesn't want to travel, but we have him up on the, you know, let's talk to him now. Hey, Howard.
Yeah.
Hey, how's it going? And he's up on the screen. So there's going to be that. But then you're going to have the people that are live, and it might be only a audience of 200, 250. But I think there's going to be the hybrid. I have a client in January that we're building a soundstage, and we're actually going and building an entire set, and they're going to use it for their national sales meeting. They're going to use it for their general manager's meeting. They're going to, there's three separate meetings that are going to happen on this soundstage, and they're going to have 50 to 100 people in the, in an audience. So I see it being a hybrid thing for a few months, and the vaccine, who knows, that'll change things, but who on the international travel, I still have a couple of them on the books for 2021, but we don't know what the travel's going to look like.
I was going to say, I still have to keep an eye on that, because it's a maybe, maybe not, as far as international travel, for sure. You got to open up nationally first.
Oh, yeah. No kidding.
it's kind of crazy. I think that some companies are going to get sticker shock, though, from seeing what hybrids cost.
Well, there are clients that are getting sticker shock on what these virtual,
what the virtual costs. Yeah.
Because for every event that you have, it's a 2-day show. Okay, that's good. But we need 2 days of rehearsals at least. Plus, we need an entire day or two for tech checks. Because for every presenter that's going on stage, they need at least an hour to an hour and a half of what's your internet like? Are you hardwired? Right. Are you wireless? What's your signal?
Right.
That lighting that you have in your room is really bad. Is your camera blurry?
Yeah, exactly. You know,
it's all of that stuff. So it's like they are like, why does this cost as much as it does in the ballroom?
Well, because sometimes too, you're finding that these people have, you know, subpar equipment for their regular stuff, which is normal. I mean, it's not like they were intending to do this big show. And how much lead time do you have to send them out equipment? Can they get it set up themselves? Do I have to send a tech to your home to help you get it set up?
Yeah.
You know, how much stuff do you need if we want to make you look professional?
And they're also realizing that it takes the same number of crew to do a virtual meeting in the same positions as if they were in the ballroom.
Yes, sir.
Because you need the backstage manager that's making sure that the show flows are all up to date. Yeah, exactly.
I'm on the phone.
you need the stage manager that's saying, okay, stand by, you're going on stage, and stand by to roll records, all that stuff. You know, you need the switcher dude, the record dude, the graphics, the prompter, and so
all that.
You need everybody that was backstage. You need them now in the studio or online, because goodness, we have.
And
had...
how fancy are you going to get with Zoom, so that you need an actual Zoom person controlling everything that you want to do fancy in Zoom?
Yep, because we did
have breakout rooms and webinar and bring people in and throw people out.
Yep. And speakers, guest presenters, speakers. All that stuff. We did a Zoom as the final stream. Not very many people are using Zoom as the final stream, but we did a event that was 5 days, and every day was 34 to 38,000 people attending every day. Mm. And you're looking at that going, they never could have done this in a ballroom. They never could have done it this way, and they were totally happy. And they had panels, live six-person panel, followed by another six-person panel. So the logistics of going into that was almost daunting, but you know, we pull it off. We get there.
Well, I have no doubt we can pull it off. People that do events like we do, you have all of those things ingrained, and it's just a matter of applying it into a different application and a different setting.
Because a show is linear.
A show is a show. That's right. Yeah, a show is a show.
You're not putting things on top of each other, and you're saying this is what's coming next.
Right.
And that's about it. One thing I've noticed, just as an aside, one thing I've noticed with these virtual meetings is the clients change the dates arbitrarily. it's just like, you know what? Our executive can't make it on the 7th. We're going to make it the 17th. Our crew isn't available. No, well, anyway, it's going to be the 17th.
I'll get a whole new crew for you. No problem.
I mean, and it's the week before. I have a show next week that we just finally got the dates, you know, zeroed in. Mm. I said, I'm not available Monday, Tuesday. You can get me Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And they said, no, we need you Monday. And I'm like, you just let me know what the client says. And the client finally, you know, zeroed in because of all of the executives they were trying to schedule.
Right. Yeah, it can be daunting, I'm sure, on their
part.
That's
next week.
Wow.
Yeah, usually we have a year out. If it's a ballroom show, we know a year out who's going to be there and where we're going to be and even what we're going to get fed.
Yeah.
What's for chicken?
What's for flat meat?
Yeah.
What's the worst crew meal you ever had?
Oh, goodness. It was, I'm not even going to say the client.
No, don't say the client. No.
Yeah, I know. It almost came out there right away.
Almost.
The fruit plate in the morning gets uncovered and all of the little bugs go, you know, scattering off of it. And you're like, oh, I don't want that. And then, you know, you get the can of Diet Coke and the expiration date was over a year earlier. And everything that we were served for that, and it was a week, everything that we were served was horrible. The guacamole was brown.
We're getting all the leftovers pulled out of the storage pantry that was in the basement that nobody knew was there.
Yeah. What? And you knew that if you had chicken one day, it was going to be chicken soup the next day. And then after that, it was horrible. Yeah. So I would think the bugs on the fruit plate that first day was pretty bad.
You reminded me of one that I have, which was the fruit that was sitting out on the loading dock that smelled and tasted like cigarettes.
Oh, great. Yeah. That's good.
You or how stick about that the, apple up to your face and you're like, ew, take another one. Nope. You too.
I don't want
They all one. Smell like cigarettes. And I was a smoker at the time. It was like,
no kidding.
Still don't want to eat it.
The show in Mexico that had the entire, hors d'oeuvre trays and everything set out for 2,000 people 4 hours early. And everybody that ate on that buffet got sick. And it was the travel diarrhea is what what the hotel called it, because it was Mexico. And it was, I didn't eat anything because I was out there setting up one of the stages going, why are they setting out the mayonnaise now? It was like 100 degrees and it was horrible.
Oh man.
Everybody got sick.
I have some others, but we'll stop going there. I'll save them for another show.
Perfect.
I want to get into this one with you. Maybe it's a yes, maybe it's a no. So maybe this question doesn't go anywhere with you, but as a freelancer, have you ever had to fire a client? You ever decide that a client just was not working out for you, not no longer worth your time and stop taking the show? Yeah. Okay. Because some people are afraid to not only to talk about this, but to do it. And I don't want people to be afraid. I want to tell these stories and encourage people to do the right thing for themselves.
And yes, It was hard because it was one of my summer events that was a 10-day event. And in the what used to be the usual world, summers were slow. And so I was always looking forward to this 10-day event. But one year, the owner of the production company came and sat next to me. I mean, it was for 8,000, two waves of 8,000 that came in. And so it was a pretty big event.
Yeah.
And he came and he sat next to me and he said, "Is it okay for us to go 60 days on your payment?" And I went, "Well, you know, I'm kind of like looking for this check to get me through my mortgage for the next month." I said, "But no, it's okay." And it was almost 90 days. And so the next year, I took the show and I was on show site again. And he comes and sits next to me again. And he says, "Is it okay to do 60 days?" And I went, "Nope. I do need net 30 on this. I really do." And he goes, "Okay, yeah, that's fine." It was almost 60 before I got it. And so when they came up for the next year, I said, "No." And actually, he had done that to everyone on the crew, and only I think two people stayed with him for the next year.
Wow.
See? So I think we all fired him. Yeah. Right. So that's kind of like firing a client. It's not, you know, in their, it's not to their face saying, "You're fired."
Yeah. Oh, but, yeah. No, absolutely.
No, I don't think that this is a match for us anymore.
Exactly.
Because so, back in my Super America days, I did hiring and firing. So I know what it's like to fire somebody. But
right.
I fire a client.
Well, and we say that behind the scenes that we're firing our client, but that, like you said, it's more of, "I'm not taking the next one. You know, we're done working together. This is the last show," kind of stuff. But yeah, I think some people are afraid to do it. And you certainly have to be in a financial position to lose that income, right?
Yes.
You have to be confident that you're going to be able to lose that and be okay, you know, if you don't get anything else.
Speaking of that, going into the pandemic, I know a lot of people that were not financially ready for that.
Yep.
And that hurt a lot of people. So that's one thing throughout the years that we have made sure that we have, we had great advice years ago, and we made sure that we have at least 6 months savings so that if anything happens, like what could possibly go wrong, that, you know, at least have 6 months of savings. So, and that sure helped us. And boy, there's some real sad stories. A friend of mine here in town that said I think it was like last month or a month before, he said, "Looking for that second stimulus check, I have now taken all of my personal savings and put it into my company so I can at least pay my people." And he said, "This is the, if this goes and the last of my personal savings goes," he says, "I'm going to be out of business."
And wow.
I haven't heard back from him. I haven't touched base. I should probably just touch base and see how he's doing. But
yeah,
that's a story. I mean, that's a way of life for a lot of people these days, is check to check.
Yeah. And, you know, your 6 months of savings is great advice, because not only, you know, like who could expect a pandemic that nobody's expecting that, but did we really expect the 2007 crash? Right.
No.
And if you don't have diverse clients or your foot in a couple different industries, let's say there's a financial crash and all of your clients are, you know, Merrill Lynch.
Well, that's what happened at Martin & Bastian. That's why I lost my job. Is our number one client was a financial services company,
right?
And actually, I had two big ones that were financial service. So, yeah, and then there was the food service industry that, you know, just said, no, we're taking everything back.
Right. Yeah. Right. As soon as you have a problem in one industry, they all disappear from this marketing market, which is ultimately what we do.
Yeah. And
we're helping them there with their marketing. And if their marketing budget goes to nothing in a particular industry, you know, that industry has disappeared from our books for a while.
Yeah. And I have a lot of people, my wife used to be in the banquet catering. So it was so funny when I was in the same ballroom as she was, and she was, she was waiting tables and I was calling shows, but it's very funny. She is not doing that anymore. She hasn't done that for a number of years, but she's keeping in contact with the people in the banquet industry, and they have not worked since February.
Right. It is more than us. It is more than,
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And at least we have this virtual world that some of us are in that is keeping, you know, at least some food on the table. But boy, there's some people, you know, like I feel bad for the guys that are equipment vendors.
Yeah. And so you have some of the large ones that had production to fall back on, and, you know, the PRGVER. And some other large companies like that, that already had their hand in with some clients anyway, they're surviving just fine. But you have smaller ones that weren't doing any production that now aren't doing any rentals either.
Right, exactly. And so it's, what is the next normal? And yeah, I just hope and pray that we're going forward and that our industry can rebound from this. And we can look back with 2020 vision and look back and say, wow, did we learn a lot?
Yes. Yeah. So what changes do you see? What's the most significant change that you see sticking with us?
I think the virtual. I think being able to hook people up from around the world.
Yeah.
'Cause there was a show I did just a few weeks ago that had three boxes up on the screen. The left-hand box was from Dubai, the middle box was from Barcelona, and the right-hand box was from Switzerland. And it's like being able to do that, and they're all talking to each other. They're talking back and forth. I mean, I remember the days of the telex. I mean, you know, getting that phone and having to dial in and can we get the phone?
The telos
systems. Microphone? Yeah, and tell us. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Can you get the microphone into that phone so we can hear and they can hear? And it takes you all night to put it. Now it's just like, you know, vMix is another input into your high-res switcher. So
how about, you know, those dial-in conference calls where everybody had a phone number and you actually talked to humans?
Oh, yeah.
Putting you through into the conference calls. Those were fun. Those were the days.
Yeah, exactly. We're looking back at that now.
It's all automated now.
Yeah. So I think that's the biggest thing. That I think it's going to stick, and we'll just evolve right with it.
True. What's the best advice you think you've ever received?
I have no idea.
Could be personal, professional, anything.
I think the best advice goes back to that technical director that said, don't call your own shows if you are producing them, because what hat are you putting on?
Yeah.
He said, you know, right now we need you on comm as a show director talking to this crew. But right now you're in the front row with all of the clients because they need to talk to you. And he goes, what hat are you wearing?
That's the point you needed to make with that as well, is the fact that your crew needed you at the same time that the client needed you.
Yes, exactly. And that's very hard.
Yeah.
And I know some producers that don't want to give that up. They don't want to give up calling their own shows. And good for them.
That's where I would come in as a freelancer. I had a lot of people that didn't want to give up their own, and they would do a lot of the prep work, bring me in on site, have me do, you know, run all the gamut on site while they dealt with their client, walked in and called their show. And at that point, I just step back, hang out and see what I'm needed for, get some coffee.
Yeah.
You know,
feed the crew.
I love feeding the crew. Have you watched our trailer?
I have not.
I know you've been busy. I'm just messing with you.
Yeah. And when this is done, I've got a call right after this. And then I've got a tech check this afternoon. And
oh, fun.
Yeah.
Fun.
And you know what? November and December used to be real slow. My best December ever in 12 years was 2 days in New York City for an investor day. 2 days in December, 1 year. Other than that, I've always had the month of December off. I am booked all the way up till Christmas.
Well, if you need any help, let me know. If you want to kick some shows to the side, I'm your gal.
The problem is I don't do the hiring.
I hardly ever
do the hiring anymore. I used to.
This has been fun, though. I hope we can catch up with you again. Can we have you on again sometime for a follow-up?
Yeah.
Awesome.
See how 2021 is going?
Yeah, exactly. Hopefully better.
Oh, yeah. No kidding.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Roger. This has been very, very enlightening. A lot of fun. You're such a great person to work with. You're always smiling. No, really, you're always smiling. You're always happy. I love it.
Yep. Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity to be on with you. It's always a pleasure to see you too.
Oh, thank you. Well, you have a great day and we'll see you again sometime.
All right. Take care.
You too. Thanks for listening, everybody. Don't forget to hit subscribe. Check out our website at feedthecrewpodcast.com for more information, as well as links to all of our episodes, bulletins, and social media.
When you're hungry for
inspiration,
information,
friends, and laughter,
join us
on Feed the Crew.